Welcome to Tanked Up, the podcast, all about video games and beer. I'm one of your hosts, Ben. It's episode 401. I'm here with Adam.
Hey.
Hi. We made it.
Yeah, still somehow ticking.
400 didn't kill us, even though it was nearly 3 hours. I've yet to edit it, so that might kill me, but we'll find out. See how well all those tracks line up. We're gonna continue on. We haven't got a Lucy with us today, so there won't be a quiz. So it might be a bit of a lighter episode. We'll see. We'll see how we go. But as we do each and every week, we're gonna open up some beers. I'm gonna start with a bit parched, so I'm gonna crack this open. I mentioned it last week on episode 400. And I'm gonna drink the Arbor Emperor's collaboration. It is called Jabba the Nut, and as you would expect from Emperors and the Star Wars relation, the scroll on the front is the flavor text. So Jabba the Nut, a long time ago in a brewery not too far away, we got together with our friends from Emperor's Brewery and created an Imperial Walnut Whip Stout. The stout was captured and trapped in 15 oak barrels, where it remained for a full year before being released by our intrepid packaging team. Forgoing their usual propensity for the noble pint can, the team set about transferring the beer into a number of 440ml cans, deemed more suitable for beer of such magnitude. And it is 10%.
Nice.
But it is not a vegan beer. It's got lactose in it.
So that's nice.
Yes.
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. What are you drinking this evening?
I've got Stig Bergat's Double Nelson Dippa. It's 8.4%.
Mm. Nice.
So I'm not familiar with them. Wait. Yeah. That's kind of why I bought it, which is like, oh, never heard of these. Stig Bergat's is in Goldenburg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall ever having from them. The Double Nelson is actually quite amazing because it's two seagulls wrestling.
Yep.
And like each putting it in them, both seagulls I think are putting, maybe only one seagull is putting it the other in a Nelson.
Like it's very good. It's very good.
But yeah, it's kind of wild. Yes. So 8.4%. Doesn't say anything else. I'm assuming it has Nelson Sauvin hops in it just by the name. Yeah,
cool. Nice. Okay, good. Let's get these cracked. I should have cracked mine already, but I didn't. I was marveling at the seagulls.
Yeah,
ooh, that's spat everywhere.
Oh wow,
a touch of a taste before I smell it or pour it. To get it off my hands. Ooh, that's velvety. I'm just pouring. That looks velvety. Nice. Put that one over that side. There we go. As you would expect, a walnut whip stout is so incredibly dark. There's no light bleed in that at all. You can just see from where it's pointing towards the light, the etching of the left-handed giant glass. But not kind of as it's pointed towards. Heads disappeared really quickly. Big nose, bit of alcohol on there, bit of sweetness. It's almost a bit, dark chocolate in there. There's like the sweetness is maybe a little, almost kind of not necessarily aniseed, but it's almost kind of edging towards that sort of way. Like maybe it's a little bit sort of cherry, a little bit sort of Dr. Peppery almost in the nose to it.
Oh, interesting.
Not necessarily marzipan. What's marzipan? Marzipan's almonds, isn't it? But it's kind of got that little bit, and I guess that's what the walnut is giving a little bit. Maybe there's a bit of more sweet nuttiness that's kind of coming through. That's a goddamn smooth beer. Instantly, as soon as you sip it, it's just so smooth. Lovely kind of medium body, not too viscous, but it's really, really smooth. And that flavour's lovely. There is that sweetness in there, definitely. And again, just edges on that like kind of maybe more, it is maybe more cherry kind of in the flavour, but huge amounts of dark chocolate in here. And I think it's that, that the combination of kind of like the walnut, or at least then maybe the lactose is just heightening that that little bit, just to bring that sweetness and make it maybe a little bit more, not kind of nutty sweet, but kind of a little bit, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? That's what I'm looking for. That's the exact noise that this beer elicits from me. Oh, I'm going to have to just continue to drink it and see. You don't get quite so much of the alcohol on the flavour that I was getting through the nose, which is great. So it's you can't tell that it's a really big beer. I wouldn't put it at 10% just through sort of the smooth body to it and the flavour of it. I'd put it maybe a little bit lower than that, but you don't get that burn. I think it was on one of the beers I drank last week, and there was that little bit of sort of alcohol burn kind of in there, where it was up towards that, that sort of 8% mark. But this, not at all. Don't get that at all.
That sounds great.
It's really nice. Really nice. Almost edges on a barley wine. You know, it's that kind of level of sort of sweetness and just that touch of alcohol right in the background to it. But yeah, very good. Very good. How about the Stigbirds?
The Double Nelson. So it is...
Stigbaguettes.
Stigbaguettes, yeah.
Stigbaguettes.
Hazy, slightly orange, more orangey straw color, but like...
Yeah, almost solid.
It's as opaque as yours, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can barely see my hand making any shadows. It's got a nice little light head. It poured kind of exactly like this and just stuck around. It immediately got... bit of a grapey, like a white grape off the, off the pour, and like nice thick dank hops as well.
Nice.
It was like with the nose, like literally cracked the can. I was like, oh shit. But you were talking, so I didn't want to say anything. but yeah, you, that dankness is still lingering on the nose, and like I said, a little bit of like a green or white grape. Really. I'm glad the dankness is lighter on the nose than it, when the initial hit, because that would be a bit much, because it was quite like, oh shit, and now it's just like a nice. Oh, that's very satisfying. I'm having those up right away.
Yeah, do it. Lucy's in the chat. She's not feeling very well, so that's why she's not joining us this week, but she is in the Twitch chat, just mentioning they haven't had tea bags in the house for a week, so her tea is tasting almost as good. She says as good as beer today.
So one thing I have to say is that at the 8.4%, it does have that viscosity. This is a nice, thick, double IPA. It feels...
Yeah.
Got volume.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it finishes with a bit more... So it starts with a bit more of that grape, but it finishes with some light stone fruit. Oh. That dankness is pitch perfect for that bounce. That,
nice.
That movement between the two fruity... like types of fruit, and it just lingers. I would get more from them already. What I like about it is that dankness is coupled with a level of bitterness, but like it's not in your face. It does mean that the finish has this like low level bitter, which is kind of what I want, because it's not lingering too long, and it's like slope fading away, but it means I don't, like, I'm still tasting something, so I'm not, but it's light enough, and it still finishes with a bit of a wet mouthfeel that I'm not, like, rushing to replace this, like, kind of, you know, a taste that maybe I don't want. It's lingering, I can still taste beer, so
yeah.
I kind of can drink it on my own terms, which might be quicker. This is very tasty. I really like this. What am I trying to say? There's a lot going on. There's the nice, full flavors. It feels thick and a bit creamy. I wonder if there's oats in here, actually. Yep. Multi-barley oats. Sweet. That makes sense.
Nice.
Just because of that creaminess and that thickness is not just 8%. It's not just from the alcohol. But all these things, but it's still quite light to drink. It just, mm-hmm. like, has this fullness, but it's not, like, big. It's not, like, boisterous. It's just really full, and there's, like, a nice nuance that you can kind of taste it. So despite being, like, what I was, like a fuller-bodied 8.4% DIPA, it's just, like, the it's got a really interesting taste curve. The curve is kind of, is not, like, up here. It's kind of, the whole mm-hmm. thing is down a bit, so it's quite nuanced, and because of that, I can come back to it much more quickly. Because I'm not feeling like, oh, it's an 8% that has this big thing. It's like, oh, this is a really fulfilling or
sure.
Yeah, full but not expanded, I guess.
Nice, nice, good, good. Be interesting to see how it kind of fleshes out over the next kind of 30 minutes or so. See if it gets any bigger or you just start to get used to those flavors that little bit yeah. as well. So yeah. Nice, nice. Let's then jump straight into games, I suppose. Or have we got some news this week?
We do have news.
Okay. News. I've been yeah. kind of out of the loop for the week, so I've not seen
it's
much.
It's mild news.
it's like the weather.
I just wanted to bring up that. So, both of us were big fans of Suicide Squad: Stop the Planet, or whatever the fuck it was called.
I have no idea what that game's called. Save the Justice League, or Kill the Justice League, or Hang Out with the Justice League,
Kill the Justice League.
Party with the Justice League.
Yeah. Warner Brothers, in a Morgan Stanley investor event, the CEO of and president of streaming and games, J.B. Perrette. Good lord, what a Warner Brothers Discovery CEO and president of streaming and games. What? So
hang on. But doing an investor's thing to J.P. Morgan or Morgan Stanley or something, like too many initials here.
They were hosting the event. He was speaking at it, presumably
to
convince people who have money to further invest in WB because their plan is good. He basically said, last year's best-selling game. For Warner Brothers was like Hogwarts Legacy. It's
oh yeah, Hazard Chazza.
And Suicide Squad, less so. He says the big console releases can be volatile. That's a great business when you have a hit like Hogwarts Legacy. It makes the year look amazing. Unfortunately, we also have disappointments. We just released Suicide Squad this quarter, and which was not as strong. It just makes it very volatile.
Okay.
So what do you think is the new strategy is? This is a new game.
More Harry Potter games, more single player experiences. I imagine you're going to tell me it's the exact opposite.
Sort of. I mean, so he highlighted that they've got like a bunch of they've got the rights to billion-dollar IPs like Batman, or sorry, DC, Harry Potter, and a couple others. But within the studio segment, we're doubling down on games as an area where we think there's a lot more growth opportunity that we could tap to with the IP that we have and some of the capabilities on the studio side, where we're uniquely positioned as both a publisher and a developer. This pivot will see the company emphasizing its live service offerings. Rather than just launching a one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that's a live service where people can live and work and build and play in the world on an ongoing basis?
And keep giving us money.
Yeah.
Harry Potter MMO is obviously greenlit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
Suicide Squad, if anything is this close to the style of a live service game, is this like communal, because it's just 4-player looter shooter.
Yep. Yeah.
It failed miserably. That means you should do AAA console titles? Like, you want to go.
It's weird. Like, the
Hogwarts Legacy was a single player, narrative focused, IP driven thing.
Yep.
Suicide Squad was a multiplayer, somewhere in between live service and like Counter-Strike, right? Like it's in that looter shooter is in that space that's very sure. close to. And one did well, one did not. And well, the answer is pivot away from written, directed plot that was driving a game.
I don't know how well like Borderlands 3 did, let's say. Because, you know, Suicide Squad, one of the closer amalgams to it would be something like Borderlands, right? Looter shooter, maybe a little bit more kind of chaotic and stuff, like first person rather than sort of third person. But that's all online, four-player, co-op, and things like that as well. Gearbox as a company are a bit problematic, or at least they're, again, upper management. And some very specific people are a little bit problematic, but you never hear the same sorts of things about like Borderlands. Borderlands is never really classed as a live service game. It's kind of like a single player game, just with the ability to play things through as a multiplayer, like couch co-op, or maybe not couch co-op anymore, but as a four player online kind of experience. I guess the difference is that this is a more of a like Outriders type situation, like it's MMO light, isn't it?
Yes.
In that sort of sense. And you know, there's plenty of MMOs which have failed, which have been around for only a number of years, rather than like the behemoths that have stuck around for tens of years. So getting that balance right is very, very difficult. And I think, okay, maybe a Harry Potter MMO is the sort of the tipping point for them. That could be like a big thing. I mean, not that we would play it, not that any of us are playing MMOs now anyway, but I don't think they've really, even DC, like I don't think there's anything that they could lean into that much that would give them the same level of success they've had with Hogwarts Legacy.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few, what else did like, WB make?
Yeah, it's not clear, like, it's this, like, weird notion of, well, if a lot of people bought one Harry Potter game, that means Harry Potter games now always going to sell like gangbusters or
sure,
something.
Sure, sure.
Like, it's also just not true.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting because, like, if you look at Suicide Squad at the studio level, like the dev level, this is like the first big miss, and it's precisely because it's moving towards this keep people trapped in a game for longer, grindy, I want all your hours versus I want to sell you an $80 product that you'll enjoy such that you'll buy my next $80
product. Sure, yes, yes, right? Yes.
And it's just, it's so cynical of a, like, well, I don't, like, video games can be volatile, so the answer is to make a live service game which should have more of an outlay than a single player AAA, presumably because it's being designed for multi years. But like, think of all the live service games that have come and gone.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, like this is not less volatile. If anything, it's worse. Like, there's only one or two that have to stick around. What is wrong with you, Mr. Perret, or whatever the fuck was your name?
Again, things like, it'd be interesting to see numbers on Mortal Kombat, because that was a rebooted kind of franchise.
$100 billion IP.
So yeah, yeah, and obviously as part of DC Gotham Knights, which I don't think did very well from kind of early reporting. Again, maybe more, you know, closer to the Suicide Squad in terms of the bones, that kind of gameplay. Based, not necessarily based upon, and Gotham Knights kind of follows in that Arkham sort of tradition, but Suicide Squad being more of a shooter, like you say, a loot shooter rather than kind of a close quarters combat kind of experience, similar in that they both multiplayer kind of games. But I think Gotham Knights is maybe built more like a single player experience. I don't know, haven't played it. So
that when they say live service or game, they don't mean like making their own MMO.
No,
would take a lot of resources. They might mean they just want people to keep coming back. And so the other part is, so Warner Brothers is looking at its four major franchises: a Mortal Kombat, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, and DC. This is
Game
of Thrones, the IGN article, but like they're all basically the same. Right. And is hoping to expand in the mobile and multiplayer free to play space. It will take somewhere between 2025 and 27 to come up, and he said the company will release more mobile free-to-play titles later this year.
Oh.
So they want multi-platform, like they want to make their like Harry Potter Fortnite, presumably, or maybe like Warner Brothers Fortnite. So it'll be like, oh yeah, did you see what Scorpion did to Snape?
Sure, yeah. Although Fortnite has had, you know, they've pushed out Batman, and I imagine a few other kind of Warner Brothers characters have gone over to Fortnite. You know, Fortnite's had those characters. Fortnite has fucking every character, essentially, because just the sheer scale of it. It'd be interesting to see other games. I don't know whether they hold the license, whether it was kind of one and done individual games for things like Shadow of Mordor, those kinds, you know, those Lord of the Rings kind of games. I don't think they hold rights to Lord of the Rings. They might just have the ability to make some games within that, or maybe not now. Game of Thrones is an interesting one, because have you seen a Game of Thrones game that isn't like random knockoff kind of style RTS mobile-y kind of thing?
That's what they want, and like clearly it must. So I'm guessing that the fact that I didn't even clock that there are video games Game of Thrones, there probably are, but like that probably they're probably making tons of money on these, right? And the like initial outlay, like the cost of these things aren't high, and microtransactions, like really this is like microtransactions, and like multi-platform in a certain sense means like low fidelity in hope you understand the way I'm using the term, right? Like if it plays on a mobile phone, there's just less stuff you're doing in the game. Technically I'm not saying these games are worse or whatever, but like it just from the amount of like the type of resource allocation they have to do is much different for a Suicide Squad versus a game that's also playable on a mobile.
Sure,
that's all.
Sure. Yeah.
And if you're just looking at that old bottom line, then like if you've got a couple of these like bullshit Game of Thrones games that neither of us knew existed and they're being mentioned, they're definitely making money. So why not? There's a Quidditch game coming out apparently, or is what they want to do, and like it'll be stuff like that where their console PC games will be these like, I guess Quidditch 2025. What's it, Quidditch Cup?
Or again, like Final Fantasy did with Blitzball. Like it's built. I don't know whether Quidditch is in Hogwarts Legacy. I would imagine it is in some sense. But you know, Final Fantasy kind of locked Blitzball into Final Fantasy X, whereas they've used other elements like Triple Triad, the card games that came out of like Final Fantasy VIII and IX and stuff to push into other games. There's now one in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, kind of a different kind of version. But when Final Fantasy XI came out, it came with a free kind of version of an online playing of Triple Triad. And that was great. I spent most of my time after buying Final Fantasy XI playing Triple Triad instead. And you've got to think that they can pull, I suppose, whatever they want from any of these kinds of IP to make, I suppose, whatever kind of game, especially if they're looking to go into like the mobile space.
A level of complexity that's different.
Yeah, very much, very much. And, you know, doing a Quidditch game in and of itself might not, you know, pull too much in. But if it's an online game with a season pass, with all of those cosmetics, that's simple to play on your mobile phone, you know, you can absolutely see that kind of coming out. It's not necessarily like a Pokemon Go style thing, like a gacha kind of game, but at least it might be a daily check-in for a hell of a lot of people.
Yep. Yeah, Lucy's in the chat and says, make more Space Jam games. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's how...
What is multiverse, that multiverses, mate. Multiverses.
What if Space Jam is the new Fortnite? What if Space Jam is their hub world?
Well, this is, I think...
And then you have Dothraki playing basketball. And Quidditch.
Mate, you've got Jason Momoa as Khal Drogo and Jason Momoa as Aquaman. And then probably Jason Momoa as whatever else Warner Brothers gets him to do.
It's perfect. You can reuse the assets. It's exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. Cost savings.
Exactly. Just a different costume every time for the same head, essentially.
Yep.
But multiverses.
Even the skins are getting reused. It's literally like just Jason Momoa in like a white t-shirt and jeans, and they're like Aquaman in casual wear.
Dressed up with some ears on in a Space Jam outfit. They're like, here's Bugs Bunny.
Just that. And then they've got Drogo in a casual wear, and it's the same skin, but they charge you twice for it.
Oh, so Lucy reminds me with Space Jam, yeah, multiverses kind of came and went, not even last year, 2022 maybe, that it was out in beta for absolutely ages and then just has disappeared. And is I again, news from weeks ago that it's maybe on the way back potentially, who knows. But multiverses could be their big, you know, it's that Super Smash Brothers style game where you can play as all of those characters across. So it's got like Arya from Game of Thrones. It's got Bugs Bunny in it, obviously. And it's got LeBron in his Space Jam outfit and stuff, and Batman and Wonder Woman and stuff.
Space Jam LeBron.
Exactly. And I think that was maybe like, and again, that very much can be a live service game. You know, you will come in and you will play, you will check in every day for your 50 credits reward kind of thing. That will go towards a 5,000, you know, cost character or skin or something like that. So over 100 days, over a year, you can unlock 3 characters for free if you check in every day. That kind of random sort of shit that sort of live service games kind of bring you. I mean, we say this, I think it's just depends on what the live service game is to capture people, because I'm still playing Marvel Snap. And I still play every day. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
How's Snap?
Oh. It's good. I'm enjoying like the meta of high-end deck building and stuff. There's a few cards I still don't have, which are like top tier kind of decks. But I've
putting money in this, right?
Because of the Google rewards I get every month, I am buying basically the monthly season pass, which is normally $9.99, and I'm paying about £4 or £5, maybe, depending on how many points across a month that I have saved. So I'm spending maybe £5 a month on it, something like that. So I'm not a whale, I'm like a beluga or something like that, I suppose.
Yes.
I'm just not a giant one, not a blue whale, like a beluga whale.
I wouldn't say you're a whale. Whales are very, you're like
like a porpoise.
Like a nurse shark.
Yeah. It just the right mechanics, the right IP, absolutely can just capture a huge audience, I guess. So it makes sense in one way, but also not to say like the detriment of the other side of it, not to say to the detriment of that single player experience. Again, lessons. WB are in a good place to learn their own lessons. How poorly received Shadow of War was, the second Mordor game, and the whole like battle pass or season pass or whatever they had baked into that game, and how poorly received it was. Everyone just hated that element of the game. They just wanted Shadow of Mordor again. They just wanted a sequel to that game, but it had so many extras kind of baked into it, like currencies and loot boxes and all of that sort of shit, that it just fell flat. And maybe now it might be received slightly differently. But, you know, when did that come out? 5-6 years ago, perhaps?
Well, this is the thing. It's like, if anything, the industry, like, it's very clear that people have live service fatigue, and the... It's just such a strange thing to hear in 2024. Oh, we want to pivot into that thing that like has actively been shown to fail consistently over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, list.
And again, it's the COVID effect, isn't it? You know, how well, and we see this, the one piece of news I have seen is that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth hasn't sold well as Remake. And, you know, sequels don't generally sell as well as the first games in a series, but also Remake came out when everyone had to be inside.
Yeah.
So everyone wants that experience. Every game in 2020 did so much better than it had any right to or was going to, just because everyone wanted stuff to do in their houses. So you've got to think, and we're seeing that with, you know, with all of the labor issues that are happening kind of in the video game space at the moment, studios that kind of pulled so many new people in and have had to let them go now, where projects haven't either come off or haven't been picked up by publishers, or have just been cancelled because companies are restructuring and those kinds of things. You know, it's not just that. It's the same with games that are coming out this year, just not doing quite as well as maybe expected. However, all of these people in these jobs up here in these companies should be able to look at these trends and understand how their businesses work. Yeah. And even with all of these mass layoffs, they're still in jobs. Like, your job is to read the market and to create the strategy and to obviously ensure growth and profit for these big companies. And as Lucy says, everyone who finished Final Fantasy VII Remake died, so couldn't buy Rebirth. Potentially.
I mean,
COVID was shit.
I'll probably end up buying Rebirth when it comes out on a platform it can be played on.
A platform you can play it on, yes, yes. Yeah.
Oh, that was my other mild piece of news. I found out that Ghost of Tsushima is coming to PC this month.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's a good game. That's a really good game.
That's what I heard, and I was like, oh, that's also, like, I think I'm in the mood for, like, a medium, like, not an RPG-like thing, but something, which is why I haven't restarted.
Oh, man. That game will look beautiful on PC.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, like, the right kind of AR, like, action-y, like, it's, you know, when we talked about the upcoming DLC for Elden Ring, it's like, oh, right, that's another game that would look pretty and is in a similar move set, although obviously a different style of game.
Interesting, because PlayStation 5, I think as an exclusive, has Rise of the Ronin coming this month as well, which is maybe not quite Ghost of Tsushima, but sits in that same kind of action RPG sort of space. It's maybe a bit more Assassin's Creed-y in what I've seen from kind of some of it. But interesting that they've got that as a exclusive, maybe a console exclusive, I'm not sure. But then putting, you know, Ghost of Tsushima on PC, it'd be interesting to see what game follows what and how they want to market that, if they even think about that sort of shit. But
So I have to say that so it's coming up May 16th, so not this month, I misremembered
May, right?
But in the, like, so in their, like, little tagline in the about this game, it says, like, experience it with unlocked frame rates and a variety of graphics options tailored to a wide range of hardware. Like, don't make that your first fucking bullet point. But they're like upscaling, frame generation, and then they have Japanese lip sync. Enjoy a more authentic experience with lip sync for Japanese voices made possible by cinematics being rendered in real time by your PC. So if you remember, there's like that game had the, you could go in Kurosawa mode and you could have like Japanese or English voice, but the Japanese didn't change the
animation.
The animations. And they literally say, what I loved about it is like, oh, you can now get it because we can get your PC to render it on the fly in a way that we couldn't do with PlayStation. That's what that says, right? It says,
oh, absolutely.
Enjoy a more authentic experience with lip sync made possible by cinematics being rendered in real time by your PC. That is such a wild way to communicate that.
It is. What will be interesting will be, is there a minimum spec for this game? Is there then a minimum spec for this game and the Japanese voice animations?
I would guess, given the minimum spec, like, it's just rendering. If it can render the, because the, there was no, the cutscenes were in-game cutscenes, right?
Yep.
They weren't, like, so if it's a PC, I think it's more of the, like, because then there's no modeling of AI and crap, right? You can just render the scene. So if you can render the lush scenes when things are moving around and the player's inputting, then when you're, like, backing off, I assume it's be easier, but I don't know enough about the game and when the dialogue happens. But as far as I can see, it's we don't know, because the minimum and recommended specs are 64-bit processor and operating system, OS TBD, processor TBD, graphics TBD.
Again, what was Ghost of Tsushima? 2019, maybe? 2020. Was it?
Yeah.
Oh. That's a COVID game as well. Okay. I think things have probably opened up because it's a summer game. But yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. Nice. We should probably move into games that we've played, perhaps, because I've got a couple of things I want to touch on this week. One of them is going to be Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So strap in, everybody. That's coming up momentarily. But the first one I want to touch on is a game called Preserve, which I've been playing a preview of. And I've been playing it for a couple of weeks, or had access for a couple of weeks. And there's a demo on Steam now. But Preserve is it's kind of a puzzle game, but it's a nature building puzzle game based around having a barren map of hexagons in front of you and getting a set of cards, essentially, and using each card on one of those hexagonal tiles to create the kind of the rebuilding of nature, let's say. And Preserve, and at least in its Steam page, shows lots of lovely, lush kinds of little areas, different sort of biomes and things. The preview, and I would imagine that the demo only allows you to access one, you know, which is the first one kind of within the game. And its main, or at least how it appears on the menu, its main mode is kind of like sandbox, right? Here is a set of tiles. Here is the cards in front of you. Get a score, and you can then unlock another set of tiles and use all of your cards, and you'll populate a new set of cards, or use your cards in a way that then allows you to get more cards. And what you're doing is basically you're using rain cards or lakes and rivers to create a base for the environment. You're then adding on top of that with like grasslands or forests or mountains. You then have animals and biodiversity which can live within those different areas. So in the grass, you know, for the first area, you had like the grasslands, and you could have like a goat that would live in it. You could have deer or boar that would live in the woods. You can have bees, which will live in flowered areas. And this does change up that kind of little bit. It's obviously very limited in the preview that I've been playing. And it felt good. It felt like a kind of a reasonable sort of open-ended element. It's in the same vein as something like Dwarf Romantique, which again was a kind of a tile picker. You know, here is a tile, place it on your board. Here is a tile, place it on your board, and link it with the other ones. Very much will live in a similar space to that. But what I preferred was, I can't remember what the mode's called. I would have to bring the game up to know exactly what it was, unless maybe the Steam page says multiple game modes besides regular harmony and puzzle game modes. So it's kind of like the puzzle mode. Basically, it presents a puzzle in front of you and says, you've got five cards. You need to... this is the solution we want from you. And you're like, okay, well, how do I use those cards to get that solution? Great, I've done it. I move on to the next puzzle. So that's the thing I enjoyed more about this game. That there is a set puzzle mode rather than kind of open-ended, keep expanding this space kind of thing. It was more, how can I get to the goal that they want me to, rather than just hit the next kind of points total and open the next area or get the next set of tiles to place on as a map to expand what I'm already doing. It was like, cool, I've got 12 tiles and all of them have to be forests. How do I do that? Or I've got 24 tiles and they want 12 forests and they want 12 kind of grasslands. How can I facilitate those kinds of things?
I can't remember the name of the game, and I want to quickly look at the Steam.
Preserve. And it's very chill. There's no rush to any of this. I like with a lot of my puzzle games, just that kind of ability to go, great, let's just have a bash at this. There's no kind of need. There's no rush. There's no time pressure on any of this. I can just sit there and just think about it. Ultimately, like, how is the best way for me to do this? Is there one way of doing this puzzle? Are there multiple ways of doing this puzzle? I don't know. I've done the one. I've moved on to the next one, sort of thing. So yeah, a sort of a mild strategy, light kind of game. I think it works very well. Visually, it's lovely as well. very vibrant in the kind of the aesthetic.
It's really pretty.
Yeah.
I like the like weird, like kind of cloudy or vague notion. Like these hexagons are kind of just in nowhere, kind of in a reflective space, but like it just looks like sort of liminal. Look,
is it the sea? Is it in the sky? Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Looks cool. I'm gonna grab the demo, I think. See how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I think now I've played a little bit of the main mode, but I've also then played through what I, you know, the unlocked element in the preview for the puzzle mode. Like, I'll look forward to playing this, but it's not something I'll go back to play through the preview version again.
No, the preview version, but like, if would you like, if there was like a daily puzzle, would that be a thing you could see yourself like?
Maybe not a daily puzzle. I don't think it's the kind of thing that I would want to go and play sort of daily. But it's more like, good, I know that there is a bank of 100 puzzles here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm in the mood just to do this kind of mild strategy and mild kind of puzzle game. I'll go in and I'll play 2, 3, 5 puzzles. Cool. I've had my fill. I can come away from it now. So I think that the kind of coming back to this game will very much, for me, rely on how many of those puzzles there will be in that mode to kind of go through. And as I say, yes, there is like an open-ended mode, but I can't see myself, as I don't necessarily go back that much to Dwarf Romantique, which is kind of an open-ended, get to the score kind of thing. You've got 50 tiles. You can generate more tiles by getting more things on the map, by linking more areas and things like that, and you can keep going. But I haven't been back to Dwarf Romantique for some time. When was the last time I played that? October of last year was the last time I played that. It's definitely one where it for me, Preserve will live and die on that puzzle mode, really.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The only other game that I've put any amount of time in.
To talk briefly about my small game experience.
Oh, yeah, go on then. Go on.
It's actually a thing that Lucy pointed me towards, which is, of course, New York Times has a new game in beta called Strands.
Yeah.
Nice. Like I said, small conversation. So it's like a word finding game. So like a word jumble. And you've got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6x8 grid of letters. And it's literally like 4 days old or something like that. Like, there's been
in
beta. You got a theme. Today's theme is don't do it! ! And then you look for words. And then as you look for words, if you find words, it fills in a bit of a hint meter. And then when that meter's full, you could click, it'll give you a hint, which is basically one of the words, because the idea is the entire 6x8 space has a solution. It's actually a set of words that are associated with a theme, and the theme is a term that will go from either the top to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Or the left to the right. Because again, this is one of those word jumbles where you can go diagonal and stuff, right?
Right.
It's not just... So, it's actually much harder to find the fact that these... It's weird, because like, if it was just a vertical horizontal one, the answer would probably pop out of you just... But because each letter can hypothetically go to, you know, all the letters around it, and then that one can go to all the letters around that, minus the one it came from, it's actually quite... hard to see the words right away, but the thing is, it's not timed, there's no points, but you can use a hint. If you find enough words, it'll tell you if you used a word before. But the interesting thing is, of course, because it's one of these like Wordle, these games now, New York Times has figured out, people love, you know, being able to post this crap on social media. So now there's like, you get a number of bubbles that mm-hmm. are equivalent to the number of words that are in the thing. So like normally there's about 8-ish words, right? And the spannogram, the one that spans the whole thing, that is the theme, shows up in yellow. The rest show up in blue.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you when you found that one. If you when you find a word, it'll say, "Yep, that's a word," but it's not one of our hints, so it doesn't those letters don't say highlighted. Once they're used up properly by a word in the theme, they're out, and so you end up with the full 6x8 grid filled up with these traced out words
yep.
in blue,
yep.
and then the one in yellow. And then you get at the end your results, which will be like, none of your mistakes or guesses show up. It's just the order in which you found blue words, the spannogram, and ask for hints, because the hints give you one of the blue words. So it's
okay.
A set of bubbles. And so it's like a light bulb emoji for using a hint, a blue one for getting a blue word, a yellow one for getting a yellow word. And then you just get this sequence of 8-ish bubbles. Right? And so then you get to like try and figure out how soon can you get the yellow, like, because you get this output. It's like, oh, well, how soon, like, oh, today I got 4 blues, then the yellow, then 3 blues. I didn't use a hint. Great. And it's just one of those things where it's, I've already started, though, when I get into the office, to just like get myself into a mind space. I usually open up Wordle, the mini crossword connections, and now I have added strands to this. I'm like, if they keep doing this, I'm no longer be able to do this because it's wasting time at work.
Well, I think we'll get into maybe a bigger conversation when Lucy's back. Obviously, someone else who plays a lot of these kinds of things, and Kim plays Wordle almost every day still. And I think something that this suite of games, I don't know whether it was they were doing it before Wordle or whether this is something that's been added, they do very well, is giving you that graphic for like shareability. How well did you do with everybody else? I can share how well I've done with everyone. They can see exactly the letters I got first and how that worked out, or the words I got first, how quickly it took me and how long it took me to do these kinds of things. I think those that this suite of games does that very well for continued engagement. And you know, maybe it's a bigger conversation about engagement, bringing people back, how that's kind of shown in things when Lucy's here as well. But it sounds fun. Sounds like, again, another, as you say, just added to the list of kind of light games to play to get the mind going before you start your kind of anything for the day sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I think you're exactly right. I think there's, so like, I'm in a Facebook group that's like that when Wordle was a big thing, in some of my other Facebook groups, people started posting it. So we made this Wordle Nerdles group. So that's you wouldn't have to spam your Facebook feed or these other groups about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just a place. And then when Connections came out, they just started doing the Daily Wordle blurb and the Connections blurb. And then I, thanks to Lucy, because Lucy sent me the link before it was on the actual New York, like the first couple days, it wasn't on the drop-down menu, but you could go directly to the URL.
For subscribers sort of only. Yeah.
But the beta test wasn't closed. It's just they didn't share the thing.
Yeah.
So I just like sent that to the group. I'm like, oh, by the way, there's this new fun game. So now it's just like now people are just posting all three.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like, great. That's going to keep me doing this and because I do like word finds and it's nice and quick. And you know what I have noticed is, if my brain isn't working well and I can't get the answer to some of these, I just leave them open on a tab or I come back.
Yeah.
And I just like, right, because so that's why I'm not actually that worried about them coming up with like 7 more that I'm going to like lose my mind by starting my day with 45 minutes of games. Just because usually it's just this actually helps. It's actually helped being like a good guide of like, oh, am I still tired? Because a coffee, like, because it's like, oh, I'm staring at Connections and I can't see anything. And on a normal day, I usually can see it really easily. I'm pretty good at not making mistakes in Connections.
Yeah.
And so if I sit down and I'm staring at it, I'm like, nope, no idea. Cool. I'll come back. But that means I might start the day with emails rather than like straight into marketing or something
like that. Sure. Nice. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, anyway, so that, like I said, small experience.
Yeah, yeah. Very unlike Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which... How deep do I get? We've been going nearly an hour. How deep do I get into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth? Maybe I'll get as deep as I am into the game. In that, I have put in 12 hours, and I am only on the fourth chapter. And this is with me skipping the first chapter, because I'd done the demo. That was essentially chapter one. So I started the game, played the that kind of element of you do need to play 5 minutes of, you know, what was in the demo, and then you're straight into chapter two. You're in Calm. You do the grasslands section. You hit the Chocobo farm, and you're making your way through this area to get to Junin. And I've basically done that first grasslands area, done the Mithril mine. And within 12 hours, I've got to the area that is just before Junin, essentially. You know, it's insane that something like Final Fantasy VII as an original game was maybe 35, 40 hours. And I'm now like 12 hours into that middle section of the game, which was like, you know, a 4 hour section of that element. Yeah. And they've managed to push this over, you know, such a big amount of time.
Feel stretched, I think, is the key.
So I like, would be the, yes. Yeah. I like what they've done. I like that the area, it's not an open world. It is a big, big, huge open area. The grasslands is massive. And it's got Calm in it. It's got a couple of different kind of environments in there. What they've done is they have... I don't know how much of Remake you played. But there's a character called Chadley. The worst possible name ever for any character. Yeah. But Chadley shows up and he's like, hey, I don't really work for Shinra anymore, sure. Like, but can you help me discover the world? And with that comes all of these icons across the map. But all of that has an output in terms of like the items you get. Obviously, there's battles, there's experience to earn, to level up your characters and things like that. But they've kind of taken the Ubisoft approach and gone, here's a tower you should open, and that will tell you where the things within this area are. You could stumble across them without doing those towers, absolutely, and you'd have to do some extensive kind of exploration to be able to find all of that. But it does and it doesn't feel a bit stretched. So there's elements which do, having to, you know, I'm doing a quest over here, and they're like, go all the way over here for no reason at all onto the other side of the map. And I'm like, I've already come from that area. So anything I would discover on the way here, I've already discovered. So pushing me back over that way isn't giving me any sense of discovery. It's not pushing me through things that I might not have experienced already. It just seems like, for the sake of, we didn't know where to put this, so it's over here kind of thing. And there's fast travel, and I'm using that a reasonable amount to blip between kind of the areas. And again, this is just the grasslands. This is just the first area that you kind of come out to, and it feels quite big to start with, but once you've navigated it a little bit, it doesn't, you know, that sense of scale that I first felt when I got into the grasslands has calmed down a little bit. I'm like, okay, you know, yes, I get the size of this space. Actually, the fast travel makes a massive difference in being able to navigate the scale of what's kind of going on. But then I've done all of these bits, and then there's still this little area down here to discover. Great, I'll go and do all of the bits down there and get new items, new equipment, level the characters up. And more importantly, do a lot of side quests, which open up that extra bit of story, right? So there's the kind of the element that Final Fantasy VII as a experience is 30 hours, because it is quite a linear experience. Yes, there's a world map, but you have to go from here to here. You just fight a bunch of stuff in a zigzag pattern on the way to it. And you can go back to those areas when the world opens up and you get the airship and that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's a little bit of that traversal where you get a golden chocobo or whatever, however you're moving around that world map in the original Final Fantasy VII to be able to go to those different places and get those different things. This very much is like taking that idea and bringing it down into, you know, here is an area that we want you to explore. Great, now you've done that. And as I have done, you then get the Mithril Mine area. You move through that to get to the Dune kind of area outside.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting into Dune and doing the whole military parade type thing just to see how insane they've made that, basically. See what ridiculousness they have. It's, you know, in the original game, Cloud kind of comes in and has to go and get the uniform and move through the base and then do the actual parade kind of thing. See how close of an amalgam they have to the exactly. But it's kind of good in a way that I'm like, I'm not absolutely blasting through this story. You know, again, you said, how quickly am I going to get to Gold Saucer? Well, I'm fucking not. That Gold Saucer is fucking miles away,
right,
at the moment. And, you know, they made quite a bit of Gold Saucer in all of their promos and advertising and that sort of stuff. You're like, come here and play all of these mini games. But actually, there's a reasonable amount of kind of like mini gamey bits kind of on the way to that as well. You know, they've almost gamified lots of elements of the game itself, in terms of collecting things, fighting enemies, doing stuff in the open world to then open up some more of Chadley's like training fights and things, or making, you know, it really is. And again, summons work in a slightly different way as well, in that you don't have to go around and find the materia. It's not hidden within the world somewhere. It is, Chadley has a VR sim for it. But what he does is, within the world, there are shrines, and if you visit the shrine, it essentially lets you bring the summon down a level, so you can get straight into the area, and you could try and fight it to win the materia, or you could explore a bit, hit one of the shrines, and go, cool, I could take this down to level 2, rather than being at level 3. I can instantly take this down to level 2. Cool. And that will, I don't know what it does, cuts off a bit of health, it doesn't hit as hard kind of thing.
Battle's just easier.
Exactly. So when I fought Titan, which was the first summon from the grasslands, I'd already hit all of the shrines. So I'm like, I'll just put this, I don't have time to do like a 10-minute fight with a fucking summon. I'll drop this down to level 0. And like, I've beaten it within 2 minutes. I'm like, cool. That suits me. That suits what I'm trying to do.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice
perfectly. Yeah.
So wait, does that mean that at some point in the game, Knights of the Round is just going to be on Chadley's little doohickey?
Well, I don't know, because I would imagine...
You go to the Golden Island or whatever, that the island in the top right, to get some item that allows you to put it in his system.
There's potentially.
Gotta be some, like, secret. So it'll be interesting to see how, like, non-standard quote-unquote summons end up being acquirable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that game. I kind of just want to play FF7 again now.
Oh, I saw someone had been, like, in the run-up to Rebirth, had been playing the original FF7. I'm like, oh, I should play that. And looking at the remastered version, like, it looks so different to the original version. And I'm like, no, I need to play the original fucking version. I need this box. I need a PS1, and I need to just put that in and just absolutely fucking smash it.
Yeah, my copy's somewhere in this room, but it's I don't think I can actually use it because it's the original 4-disc PC CD-ROM
set. Ah, nice. Okay.
And
does your PC have a CD-ROM?
No. Also, I lent it to a bunch of people over the years, and those CDs are not in the best shape.
Is it? Have you still got the cardboard box for it, or are they like rubber banded together? Essentially,
oh, no. It's in a beat up cardboard sleeve.
Nice. Right? Yeah.
But also, because it was 4 discs, it's in this like double tall pure cardboard, no jewel case, which is the problem.
Yeah, I remember.
And that's actually one of the problems, is because you just slid the CD into a slit
in the sleeve. Cardboard. Yeah.
So it would just, like, every time you took it in and out, it was getting scratched up in a way that, like, CDs aren't designed to be put there. Like, there's no, like, padding or plastic to click in. It's mm-hmm. just slided into cardboard. Like, blah. IDOS, what were you thinking?
And I suppose, yours is an NTSC version as well. So I don't know how.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I don't even know how TV, how SCART things work anymore, you know?
Yeah.
You'd have to find an NTSC PS1.
Well, no, but this is PC, right? So
it it's PC. Absolutely. Yes.
But also, I do own. Now I've got to see what version I own on Steam.
Oh, you've got it on Steam. Okay.
Yeah, of course I do. It's my favorite game. Final Fantasy VII store page. I think it's the OG. Yes. No, I remember this. Yeah, so if you actually go to the page, it says RPG Classic Final Fantasy VII returns to PC, now with brand new online features. July 2013.
Okay.
And then, if I recall correctly, last time I tried to play this on the PC, so one of the things which is nice is they like did optimize it for Windows operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Really funny. To back up your save files, remember to turn on cloud saving.
it's the whole game.
If I recall correctly, I think it has a weird launcher, and it basically needs mods to make it the right thing that we remember. So like. To get the, because they like did some mild like graphic upgrades, but there's mods to put it back to what it looked like at the time. I think there's mouths instead of no mouths, for example.
Oh, really? Right.
Like, weird shit like that. Same polygons, but they've just added more to make it look stupid. I'll have to look into this, but
just Cloud frown the entire game.
Yeah. I mean, Cloud is a frown.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, so I'll actually might look into that, because that's a fun, that'd be an easy, except for the mods, right? That must be an, depending on how the mods and launcher work, it should be like reasonable on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
That's like a go to, for the next 3 years, play a couple like 20 minutes before bed, right?
Absolutely. The last thing I will mention about Rebirth, I don't know how they've worked the whole kind of development process of Remake and Rebirth and things like that, but the music is so fucking good. They've taken those original tracks and they have enhanced them. They've also made it it's like a reactive soundtrack as well, so as you move between areas the soundtrack will kind of change as you get there. You get to the Chocobo Farm, kind of the Chocobo theme kind of kicks in, or a light version kind of comes in at various points. Obviously, the sort of the original score, but as a modern version or modernly recorded version, kind of kicks in, and just the music is so good, because more so than playing the story, because the story is again, you had this 30-hour experience as a story, and you hit those story beats, and that kind of gives you that nostalgic hit. They're so spread out now across this experience of Remake and Rebirth that doesn't give it to you, doesn't give you that nostalgic hit. But the music just hits every single time. And you're like, even with some of the newer tracks, you're like, this fits really, really well with the sort of the themes of the game and the original soundtrack. And you're just like, I'll be going along and suddenly something will kick in. I'm like, yes, this is exactly the right song for this moment. Like, they've done so well at putting all of that together. Like, so far, Rebirth as a package is just phenomenal, really. But I'm only 12 hours in. Chapter 4 of a 10, 12, 13-ish chapter game. I would imagine varying lengths of those chapters. But this game goes up to the City of the Ancients. So yes. I have, if I've played 12 hours and I'm at June, and I've got another 40 hours maybe.
Yeah.
If I do everything, you know, Grasslands, I did everything in the Grasslands. I killed all of the fiends, all of the special fiends that were around. I got all of the towers. I did all of the shrines. I found the fucking Moogle house. That's a whole fucking weird thing now. So, you know, they've expanded on 7 so much that I, like, you know, the calls for remakes of like 8 or 9.
Mm.
9 I could see, again, more fantasy style setting. 9 I could see coming in at a similar kind of, or as a similar experience to the trilogy of Final Fantasy VII Remake. 8, I've got no idea how they would do what they're doing here with 8. 8 seems like such a linear story in comparison.
Could do the, like, ARPG stuff and...
They could do the ARPG stuff, absolutely, like, absolutely.
Honestly, just maybe one episode. You could make it again.
They could just make it again with different combat, and, you know, it's a 60-hour experience rather than a 30-hour experience. You know, extend it that much. You know, 8 is such a good story. You know, the idea of the school and kind of Alta Mercia pulling across, like, Cypher into being her, like, pawn, and how actually she's playing all of the characters in there to sort of do what she wants until, you know, the kind of the castle at the end and the ultimate battle and stuff like that. Such a good game. 8 is really, really fucking good game. Yeah, but you know, pure emo, like, it hit me at exactly the right time. You know, angry teen, angry Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
So as a product, again, but I don't think I'd want that expanded world that I'm getting with 7. Like, I love the world of 7. I want more of what's going on in the world. With 8, I just like that story. I don't think I cared about what is going on in the rest of the world. This is the kind of, you know, as most films or stories or novels are, this is the most interesting point in time for this world right now. And I think 8 hits that absolutely. Whereas 7, I think, has so many extra bits that can pull from it because it is such a fleshed out world. Even in the original game, you know, you can see what's
without all the, like, added
absolutely. So I mean, more reporting on Rebirth as I get through it. Who knows, next week I might have only played another 4 hours, I might have played another 12, I don't know. We'll see how my week shakes out, but I don't think I'll be playing anything else now for a few weeks, perhaps. There's no big releases coming out unless we get some nice codes for review for certain games and things. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth will ultimately be what I'm playing, to Lucy's chagrin and you know, demise, essentially. When I come on next week, I'm like, we're only going to talk about my next 12 hours in Rebirth. That's all we're talking about this week. Sorry. So maybe we'll see Lucy in about a month's time, ultimately, until I've finished the game. But no, we won't. Hopefully she's feeling better and back with us next week. But let's finish there for today and round up on our beers. I have just read what Lucy has said in the Twitch chat, which was that she blacks out during that entire conversation. Absolutely. I completely get it, mate. I completely get it. However,
Final Fantasy is so cool. Why would you want to talk about it all the time?
However, this beer, the Arbor and the Emperor's Jabba the Nuts, it's so fucking good. I've still got like a third of a glass left.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how, like, it felt like you were enjoying it, but, like, not needing to drink it and kind of being able to savor it.
Very much, very much. It's not dry. I expected it to be a lot drier than it is. It's not wet. But it's not a dry beer. It's not kind of...
neither a washer nor a dryer.
No, exactly. Exactly. It's like a garden. It's a breezy day. It's a breezy day. It's maintained the flavor that I was originally getting an hour or so ago, even now. Like, that lovely dark chocolate that just runs all the way through this. That slightly cherry, again, walnut, I'm not really sure, but a very sweet kind of cherry, maybe almondy kind of flavor to it. And I think that's maybe the walnut with lactose just altering that very slightly. Uh-oh. I think Kim's home from a yoga session and she's burnt some flatbread. I can smell it up here. Might have to run down and just tell her in a bit when we finish. But
hope you're not smelling burnt toast.
I definitely am smelling burnt toast, absolutely.
That's not a... Yeah.
After 10% beer, especially.
Rip.
But no, it's so good. It's so good. That flavor just lasts so long. I could nurse this for, you know, the next 30 minutes or so. Yeah. I'll probably finish it within the next five. You know, we'll finish up here and I'll go downstairs and just finish it. But yeah, this is very, very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying to see if I can track it down here in the north.
So it's an Arbor-made beer.
Yeah.
I don't know how many you get up in Durham these days, or what breweries you get from Bristol.
The one place that had Arbor occasionally was in Newcastle, and that place is no longer running. So I haven't actually seen a lot of Arbor, but I'm luckily I know the people who run the craft places in town, and so I can just ask if they can get it versus. Rather than do they get it, right? Like, just because it's not in the fridge doesn't mean they can't get it.
Sure. Yeah. Nice. That's I suppose it's kind of what you want, almost, to be able to request stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the worst thing I can say is no, but also...
Sure.
I might be coming to Bristol next weekend.
We're not here next weekend.
Are you not?
No, it's like the only weekend in like the last 3 months that we're not here.
What? Where are you off to? I mean,
it just it's my niece's birthday. So yeah, we're heading down to have a family weekend.
Sucks. So the other thing though is after next week, term is over. So it's Easter break.
Yep.
But it's the Easter holidays and there's Easter term where there's no teaching, it's just marking. So
right.
And then the summer. So I'm less tethered to the north. And one of the things I've, now that I have stability, is like, oh, I get to exploit that stability to leave, ironically.
Yes.
So I'd like to see more of the people I care about more often. It's like I no longer have to stress about things, and part of that is being able to not feel guilty about going places.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So I suspect I'll have more time in Bristol, you know, going
places. Yeah, yeah. As Lucy says, brewery road trips.
Yeah, well. Exactly.
Just bop on down to Birmingham, knock on Lucy's door, and like, where are you taking us then?
I mean, we've tried that before. We've been wandering the streets like fucking... Nomads
that are drunk off the boards. I mean, we'll line it up for episode 450 or something at Birmingham
that's
reunion.
Still in like a year, you know that, right?
Oh, I suppose it would be, wouldn't it? Like, yeah, that's maybe
400
is
wild.
Yeah, maybe 420. Maybe we'll do a special 420 episode. Yeah, good. How was the beer?
Loved it. I'm gonna see. So this is next time in the Hobnocker. I'm actually ask if he can get more Sticky Brigettes because I really enjoyed it. Like I said, there's this like, it's this 8.4% double. It's got this quite. It had this huge dank wave on the nose, and I was expecting a much more boisterous beer, but in fact it was just like full bodied. It has interesting nuance and.
Mm.
As I got used to it, the dankness kind of faded to the background, which let the like stone fruit and actually the grapey notes come through a little more. And I just have this lovely like lingering light bitterness that's just been sitting with me for the past half hour. I finished the beer a while ago. It's still in my mouth. Like it's I think it's that full bodiedness, that strength means that. My palate's not going to let go of this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's like again, super low level, but like I can still taste it, and I haven't had a sip in, you know, 10 minutes, right? Like I can still taste the this beer.
Nice. Yeah.
And that's really great.
Good, yeah. Good. I was just having a quick look at where potentially online I could get some Stig Baguettes. It's an area of Gothenburg in Sweden, yeah. Which I imagine is where the brewery is probably based. They've done a collaboration with Left Handed Giant recently. They've produced a beer called Amazing Pills, which I guess is a pills, 4.8% a pilsner.
You can get them at Beer Merchants Left and Left Field.
Yeah, yeah. Have a little look. Have a little look around and see what I can get. Albatross. There's just a beer called Albatross.
Barreled stout.
Ooh. I do a 7% NEPA as well.
13.5% big bourbon barrel aged stout 2021. Intentionally sweet with a low roasted bitterness, rich aromas of oak, vanilla, brown sugar, molasses, and more. Just $11 for a can.
This is the problem with podcasting at the start of the month when all of the money is everywhere. It's like, let's just buy lots of beer. Good. We will finish there for this week then. You can get us on the socials at TankedUpCast. Follow us over on Twitter or hit one of us up. I'm at Nova_47 and Adel is
at the Omniarch.
And we can bring you over to the Discord where you can come talk to us and everyone who is congregating around our beer and gaming community to talk about those things or talk about movies. Lots of people, or a few people in the Discord talking about Dune 2 as well recently. Come on by, come and see what we're doing. Or go to our YouTube page to see our faces and see the beers that we have been drinking as well. Or join us each and every week on Twitch as we record live for these episodes. Come in and ask us questions, get involved in the conversation as well that way. Rate and review us on your podcast service of choice if you have the inclination to do so. It only takes you a couple of minutes and it always helps. But that's it, I think, for the places we are, the beers we drank, the games we played, and Warner Brothers doubling down of strategy. Yeah. We threw our hands up in the air.
More like Dead Service.
Thank you for joining us. We've been Tactical. Goodbye.
Bye.
www.outoflives.net